You're listening to the Australian Hunting and Beyond podcast with Matt, where we talk about hunting, shooting, fishing, camping, and everything else that the great outdoors has to offer. Let's get into it.
All right, I'm joined tonight by the new admin for Hunting Australia, Graham David. Mate, thanks for coming on. We've been chatting about how much we're liking season two of Alone. It's good to see some hunters on there, isn't it?
It's so good. Yeah, I've watched all the old ones. And then, yeah, we were just saying that that first season wasn't the greatest for Australia, but now I think the rules are probably a bit more relaxed in New Zealand and they're getting into it. I'm keen as.
Yeah, that first season, just them not being able to hunt, it just sort of really stopped what I feel Alone was really about. And I love the American version. And, you know, as we were just talking about off air, saying that muskox when he knocked that, it's a game changer when you're out there. And this time, seeing them being able to, you know, episode three came out last night and it was awesome to see Chase climbing up the mountain, trying to, you know, track him down. And he did burn a lot of calories heading up there, but, you know, it's worth it. That's the roll of the dice that you want to take. Yeah.
Just high risk, high reward. Like if you just down one of those things, you're just set for like the next 100 or so days and you're just sitting on your ass, just just eating deer meat.
100%. I think that's the one for me. I'm just sitting there going, if you're one of the ones that can get lucky enough to knock one, you've just put yourself at top of the pole. Like you are, you know, unless injury or something else or someone else is able to knock one too. And I hope that happens. And what I really like about this season so far is there's a good four or five hunters on there that are pretty avid sort of hunters out there. They love it. And that's why they wanted to go on there to test themselves. So I don't feel like they're going to be, I remember there was a contestant on the American one, Bebo or something like that. And it was a big unit and his whole plan was, I've got a lot of body fat. I'm just going to lay here and sort of lay around. And it was like, that's not really surviving in my sense. I want someone out there, you know, doing the hard yards and trying to really live off the land, not just sort of wait it out.
Yeah, because they've kind of pre-prepared, like they're building their fat stores before they get on there. And that was like the first Aussie one that they had. That lady, she was really good and like mentally just like strong as a rock. But she did that, just filled up, just got her fat stores in and then just chilled out for like the first week. And then I think actually she ended up hitting a little like, I don't know, a little potaroo or a paddy melon or something with a rock. And then she won it, you know, just off that one thing.
Well, that was interesting last night when they he used there was shovel to knock the brush tail possum off. Probably not the way people thought that they'd be out there hunting or getting food, but hey, do what you got to do out there. Yep. That would be hard being on that show and say 20 days in without food and still having to abide by the rules and not just go, I'm starving. I need to take this animal out. And
like I saw they couldn't eat the eels that they were bringing in. So that was rough. But then you think of the possum, like to me, I'm like, how could you ever do that? And then I'm like, oh no, they're a pest over there.
They
like,
are, yeah.
New Zealand don't like them. It's weird. Like sort of think of it as a nice little native animal, you've got to look after it. And they're just over there whacking them with shovels.
100%. It's a bit different. When it happened, I saw that. You do have to sort of check yourself and go, oh, it's a possum. Oh, wait, yeah, it's over there. Introduced species. They don't want them there. Yeah. They're poisoning them. Like, okay, at least that one got used for meat. So
yeah, making purses and stuff out of them.
Yeah, it's different strokes for different folks, isn't it? So and every country does it differently. So, mate, look. Wanted to get you on here because you're a new admin for Hunting Australia. It's the biggest group on Facebook for hunting. I love the group. And I'm the admin for Fellow Deer Hunters of Australia, which is probably about a quarter of the size of you guys because you're pretty close, getting close to the 100K mark, which is bloody awesome.
Yeah.
So we wanted to have a chat and say, how did that all come about? Find out a bit about you so that if anyone out there didn't know about you who's sort of taken over and looking after the group now, so find out sort of your background and that, and then pick your brain here because, man, we're going through a bit of a stage in my group of just some ordinary comments and people just not being supportive. And I'm not someone that will stand for that, and I've taken a bit of a hard line, but – you know, I see the drama I'm having with 24,000 people or 25, whatever it is, and then go, Jesus, you guys have got 100. That's a bit harder.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, you can't talk about Hunting Australia Group without mentioning Michael Gibson. So I didn't know him personally. I'm not going to pretend I did. I did chat to him a couple of times, and I followed his adventures. You know, like, how couldn't you if you're 100%. Into especially red deer hunting? And me and him, I think we've come across the same animals a couple of times, and I think he actually shot one of the best ones I ever got on camera. So we were trading animals for a little bit there. But yeah, so he started it in, I think, mid-2017. And from what I can gather from everyone I've spoken to, and I've gone back to the really early days of the group just to look at his posts and see what his thoughts were and what he wanted to do with it. And I've kind of tried to gather a bit of his vision and head in that direction as well. So, and he was a huge stickler for, you know, if you're not for all hunting, then you're out. Like, and I'm big on that. I'm huge on people's rights. You know, if you've got the right to hunt and it's legal, then we show it. Facebook can get a bit picky with some things. You can get, especially, I guess, with pigs and dogs. It gets a bit of a weird area there. Facebook's a bit temperamental with that stuff. But other than that, I'm all for it. And so, like, I don't pig hunt. It's just something I've never really done and grow up with it. But it's legal, and we're Hunting Australia, so you can put it on there. So we sort of respect everyone's way of hunting. And even if it's not particularly hunting, like, I'm all for, if you're just culling as well, just anything to do with the animals that we hunt. As long as you say that's what you're doing, yeah, everyone, we're all for it. So kind of tried to continue that tradition of his of just allowing everyone to come and show what they do. Doesn't have to be your thing, but it's just their way of hunting and their connection to hunting or to the land or to the animals or their traditions, whatever it is. Yeah, we allow it, all of it.
I like it. It's one of the things that, you know, what you were saying completely resonated with me, and it's something I try and do. As long as it's legal, that's the big push for me, all right? If something comes through that I find is distasteful that I wouldn't do, that's fine. That's my opinion that it's distasteful. Doesn't mean that someone else is putting it up that doesn't think that. So I'm the sort of same. I go, yep, let it through. I get some people don't like that or go, it's not a nice photo, etc. But then I go, look, it is a hunting group. It's not for the general public. It's a private group. So yep. I don't have the issues with that. But it then starts to get a bit tricky with what you were saying exactly, which is the Facebook violations. And that is a really hard one to navigate because some of the things that get flagged, I sit there and go, well, there's a lot worse that has been put there, but that got flagged over that. So trying to navigate that, because the last thing you do also want not to happen is such a great group get pegged or removed or suspended. So it's that really tricky balance of trying to have that free speech, which I'm all for, but then also not letting scammers in, not letting things come through that are going to hurt the group too. It's, it's a fine balance.
It is for sure. And I don't want to annoy people by not approving things. So, and the big things, like, we've just come off three big flags that have gone through Facebook. And that's why we've turned on the approval post. You know, we never wanted to do that, but that was sort of done before my time because I've been admining it for a while now just to help out because my posts weren't getting approved in there. And I was like, what's going on? And, oh, we're flooded. And they wanted a bit of help. So I was like, cool, I'll jump on. You know, some of those guys have been doing admin on that for, you know, 10 years. So, you know, it's hard to keep up, you know, with with 100,000 people coming at you. So, yeah, some of the stuff we get flagged for is weird. The biggest one is Facebook thinking that you're selling firearms or ammunition. So
yep.
I have to write back to people and just apologize to them and say, you know, I'm all for this. You know, I'm keen as for it. But Facebook's going to read this because you've said things like, hey, I'm interested in this kind of ammo. It's this price at this shop. You know, what do you recommend and where should I buy it from? And then Facebook sees that, nah, you're buying and selling ammo, and they flag it. And it's a big flag. It goes to, I don't know, higher up somewhere, and you've got to try and contest it, and you've got to hope that you'll win it. And if you get enough of them, they'll shut your group down. And it almost happened quite a while ago, and then we got a couple more recently. So now every single post goes through me, every single new member. I watch everything because I'm so worried about it getting taken down. Like, I'd hate for that to happen.
Oh, it's a major concern. And it's one I have the approve on, because you can do your best to stop scammers getting through and whatnot, and even people that shouldn't be in the group. But it's, and some people get a little frustrated with the questions that are there. And it's like, I get where you're coming from. However, if you're getting strikes, you don't want the group just to disappear. And you spend, yeah. You know, you definitely would be like myself. You spend a lot of time and effort making sure the group is, you know, rolling and people's posts are getting approved and the content's good. You don't want to see it just get thrown away, because it's taken a long time for you to get to that stage. I don't think people get that. And even the comments, like, I've had a couple flagged for hate speech, and it's not necessarily hate speech, but if you have an argument or say a name, you know, essentially it gets flagged, and then yeah. The group gets a warning, and then it's like, well, yep. It's one individual. And the other thing, as you said, if you allow a post to get through and it somehow has something like, I'm interested in selling this, then they strike that because the admin approved it as well. So it's a harsher hit. It's just...
Those ones are really big.
Yeah.
I've had the ones where they're like, oh, we removed this for harassment and bullying, but it's, I don't know if you can swear on here, but
yeah,
it's just, yeah, it's just words that we use in our common English language of telling people to pull their head in. And I find them funny. I find it great, but Facebook sees it in a different light, and they think that you're going after someone, but really you're just having a bit of a dig, and it's the way that we speak. But yeah, those ones I think are okay because Facebook removed it. But yeah, if you approve it and then it gets removed, that's a big one. And they're the scary ones. That's the one that'll get your site taken down. So,
and it's simple words, isn't it? Sometimes you sit there, and I had one, yeah. And the contesting is even that difficult. Like, it's such a confusing, painful sort of thing to go, hey, there was nothing really in this.
Yep.
And even some of the ones I've had flagged, but then I can't actually see the content because Facebook took it down.
Yes.
And you sit there and go, okay, well, what the hell was it? Because I might have 30, 40 posts a day, you know, more if I've gone out bush for a couple of days or whatever it is. And you sit there and go, well, I don't even know what post that was. It's not like you get one a day. And then it's so difficult just to find out what the hell they'd actually flagged, so you know for next time or what happened.
You can't learn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that before as well. They hide it from you in the admin section, and then you've got no idea what the picture was, and then that's it.
Yeah, it's painful.
Yeah. How do you learn anything?
Nah,
they're sort of they are against us in a bit of a way. I understand that they've got their own agenda and they want to keep things all, you know, PG or even G. But yeah, I did actually read their terms and conditions, and it does say that they are okay with hunting and animals, you know, as long as, you know, that animal being shot or being butchered or whatever it is within the context of hunting, that is allowed. So that kind of saves us a little bit. But yeah, the rest of it, anything to do, even with the other the group that we have, the trading post one, you know, you can't put up scopes, you can't put up magazines. There's a huge list. You're not even allowed to do edge, what do they call it, like edge something, you know, knives, blades, anything. It's like, well, this is hunting trading posts. Like, all you can do is sell boots and camo gear, and that's about it. That's their rules, I guess.
And you do have to play within the constraints of the system, unfortunately. And it's one I've spoken about on the podcast because I'm a big fan of Elon Musk and what he's done over there at X, or the old Twitter, because that is not really regulated since he's took over, because he sees what's sort of going on, and he's, even if it's not his cup of tea, he's all about free speech, which I love. But people are just so addicted to, you know, the main ones, the Facebook, the Instagram. It's hard for people to jump across. And I get it, but I sort of, it does concern me sometimes going, hey, these great groups with so much input and so much knowledge and people talking, it's, they're invaluable in my sort of opinion, and they could just get gone. That's scary, isn't it? Like,
easily. Yeah, and that definitely worries me, and that's why I'm probably a bit stricter. I might sort of let off the brakes a bit in the coming months, but at the moment I'm quite strict, and I just want it to run smoothly with no big flags or anything for a while, and then I'll start sort of slowly letting it off and just see how things go. But I'd say 95% of the stuff is getting through. It's just when people do really dumb stuff, you know, like, or things like they'll put up a photo of a, you know, a dog or something they shot, and the whole face is missing, and there's stuff everywhere, and you're like, I'm fine with that, but you're like, it's a tricky one, because I'm fine with it, but if that gets flagged, like, how am I gonna justify this? Like, yeah, okay, it's hunting, yeah, but at the same time, it doesn't look good. it's a rough one. So
yeah, it's a very hard minefield to navigate. And that's the one. Look, and I get it. If you haven't been an admin or you haven't dealt with that side of it, you just don't even think about it probably. So it's one of those things. I don't sit there and go, you know, this person's deliberately trying to cause trouble for the group. I think it's just, you know, human nature. Hey, I shot this. Some people are really happy wanting to show off the fact that they can knock something from 100 meters and take out headshots. And I get that. That's decent. That's good shooting. I've got no issue with that. But then, as you said, the image, is that going to be something that gets flagged? And then you got to think about it. Is that the hill you want to die on for that image, for the Facebook group to go? So it's tricky.
It worries me as well, because I get some people, you know, I'm doing the same as you. I'm reading the questions and how people answer them, and I'm looking at how long they've had their profile, what other groups they're involved in. Like, I do a lot to see who's coming in, and I've seen a few lately, and I'm like, oh, you got Peter, and you got RSPCA, and you got this, but then you got these hunting groups, and I'm like, oh, okay. I dig a bit further, and I'm like, that's why you were coming in. You were coming in to look at these photos and come after us or use them against us. You know, those people, and there's probably some of those people in the group now, like almost 100,000 people. Yeah, who knows? They'd be hidden in there somewhere, but I'm trying to keep them out, but yeah, that's the other side of it. We've got to be careful of, it is a private group, but there are people lurking for sure.
Well, it is hard. I'm the same. I go through profiles, and if there's no joint groups, and you can see when they've been made, and you sort of have a squeeze through, but you're not going to get everybody. Like, people can hide it quite well.
Oh yeah. And I just put up one post and then another post. So within 23 hours, I had another 100 members that had been approved and probably another 60 that had been denied. Like, I can't keep on top of that many. Like, it just flies every day.
And then if you use the admin assist version as well, where it, you know, or I use it because I've set some pretty strict sort of guidelines on it, on how it has to match up for them to get through, and that sort of automatically does it. So I sort of felt very nervous about doing that at the start, because I was like, well, I do like the fact that I can scan through it, but, you know, if they've got multiple groups and they've got multiple friends, and it's, you know, you can see that they're there, you can set that up nicely, but it is that, it's a hard one. I don't think there's a magic bullet to fix all the problems, and no. I think people have to be mindful of that 100,000 people is a lot of people to monitor, and there's probably quite a few in there that are in there to gather info or get those pictures.
There'd be DPI guys in there, there'd be, you know, whatever the, I'm not sure the Victorian version is, but and there'd be police, and there'd be all sorts of people in there looking. So And I remind people of that. Like, you gotta be a little bit careful. It's not the Wild West in here. Like, we do have to keep a bit of an image. But yeah, I turned the admin assist off for letting new people in. I look at every person, but you can turn it on for posts. So at the moment, I have everything has to be approved, but then admin assist is allowing some posts through. So, and that's, I eventually want to get it to the point where I'm just adding people to a list, like, oh no, I've seen you've done 5 good posts. You know, you can just post whenever you like now, and just start letting people who are consistently good and putting up really good quality stuff, and just let them do their thing in there, and not annoy them with having to wait for their stuff to get approved.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Yeah, I'm pretty quick on it, but at the same time, like, I've got a day job, so I can do it at lunchtime and in the arvos and night. But yeah, I like the idea of getting your post up there really quickly. It's way more fun. You're excited to share it. Yep. So I don't want you to wait around.
Yeah, 100% I agree. So, mate, let's get into you. What's your hunting background? Let's talk about your journey.
Yeah, so I started a bit later in life, and I think this is happening. I've seen quite a few people do this, write about it on the group as well. As like, my nan and my dad were both into hunting, and they used to go out sort of west of Sydney. This is back in maybe 60s and 70s, when you could just catch a train with the gun and go shoot some rabbits on some random just free land, and then just bring them home on the train.
Oh, the good old days.
Yeah, like, you were just allowed to do that. So they used to do that, and they had a little Lithgow 22 and used to go out and shoot them. And yeah, years, I think, I don't know how old I was, but in my 20s or something, we went and did a family clay target shooting. We thought, oh, that was pretty fun. Maybe we'll get our license and do a bit of clay target shooting. And got our licenses, and then we saw you could go out into the state forest, and we're like, oh, that's cool. You know, we've been all driving and camping out there before. Let's book in and do that. So we did all the R license and all that stuff, and then so me, my dad, and my brother, yeah, went out and just started just being just learner, straight up fresh state forest hunters, just making all the stupidest mistakes you could ever think of. And like, our first trip was, we turned up to Vulcan State Forest, pretty famous one for people just starting out, you know, quite close to Sydney, or one of the closer ones. So we rocked up there, and it started to snow. We saw a guy drive past us with his number plates blacked out. We didn't know what that was about. And then we went in, and my brother, I think he brought the right gun and the bolt, but brought the wrong ammo. So he left his stuff, and then we walked in, and he was using my gun as a binocular, because we didn't have any binoculars. So he's looking through the scope, and then we're yelling at him because we actually saw 2 deer, and he's looking at them, but I've got the magazine in my pocket, you know, like just absolute amateurs. But yeah, then after seeing those 2 deer, we, on our very first trip, we're like, this is it. This is what we want to do now. And that just kicked it off for us. So we did that for quite a few years, just the state forest, all west of Sydney. Loved it and got really, really into it. And just really like the idea that it's just land that, you know, if you get your license, or even if you get a bow, you just do that R license online. I think you do it online, or we did it at a club, and you're good to go. Like, you can just go, and you can just spend your life in there just finding animals. You know, you can get crazy, or you can just drop in and do a bit of a weekend warrior and go with your mates and have a good camp. And yeah, it's just, I just love the idea of just free land like that to just go and spend your time in.
I am a massive fan of it, that I don't know how people in Queensland do it with no public land.
Yeah.
I am envious of the Mexicans down there in Vic, because they just, if it's huntable, they can just walk off into it, which is just, yep. I see how amazing that could be instead of booking, because there's been plenty of times I've booked, or, you know, we have to get up at midnight to try and get the forest in the rut, and we've all, yep, probably been there and whatnot. And compared to, you know, in Victoria, just being able to go out, and if it's huntable, you just can walk off and you're in there. That, I think that's awesome. I get the reasons why and whatnot. And I think we're very lucky to have public land as well. So it's pretty cool, though, that you're able to really get amongst it. And
even just for going out there, like now that I've done it and I know some of these forests like nothing else, I even just tell my friends, I'm like, you know, you can just go there. Like, you can just go drive around, you can camp there, you can do whatever. Like, it's as long as you're not stupid or doing anything too silly, like, it's just land to use. Like, just go enjoy it. Go mushroom picking or just go take photos of stuff. Like, yeah, it's not even just hunting. It's just land for people to use. And so much of it, like, when I first started, I thought, oh, it's all just the pine forest, you know, it's just blackberries and pine forest. And then you get deeper and then you're like, oh, hang on, like, you're getting into some of these other forests and there's just acres and acres and hundreds of thousands of acres of just Australian bush with animals in there. Like, incredible that's just available.
Yeah, it's cool. I always just think how lucky we are that we've got it, and I'd hate to see us lose it in the future, because you know, a lot of listeners, a lot myself, they reach out and talk about it, that they just don't have private access and they haven't been able to sort of achieve that, which is it's a tough slog out there. I know I've been going for 5-6 years now and still try to be as, I guess, trying to be as innovative as possible to catch the eye of farmers. And I mustn't be that creative because it's not working. But it's just part of it, eh? Like, it's frustrating because I'd love to have something closer, because with a young family, it's hard to get away a lot. And if you'd had something closer, it'd be awesome. I'd love that. But I sort of then also sit there and go, hey, it is what it is. I'm lucky enough to have public land, whereas people in Queensland don't, and they have to travel a lot further. So I get that understanding of it, and it's cool to hear. I've got a couple of mates who I've met through the podcast, and they have picked up private land. And even today, like, it's been a great day today. My mate Dan, who was there when I got my first deer, he took us to his private access for the whole journey just to see it, and which was awesome. That's the first time I've seen that whole journey of meeting farmers and whatnot. And he got his first deer. He knocked a fallow doe off this morning, and I was super excited for him. We've been talking about him getting out to this private block he has. And then I get a message about an hour later with a picture of a buck. So he's got two on the first time. Oh, man, it's awesome. So, Dan, well done, buddy. I can't wait to hear the story tomorrow morning. But, yeah, I sit there. That makes me super happy that, you know, he's put in a lot of time and effort, and that was his thing, was I'm going to go after private, because young family too doesn't have the time to get out to the public land and have that travel. Yeah. He's got it. He's been able to do something I haven't, and good on him. I'm so happy for him, and it's paid off now. And, yeah, it's just those stories keep me sort of motivated to keep trying different things and whatnot. And, it is what it is, but I love the fact that I can just get out to those state forests and have a go and just explore somewhere new.
Like, I've done both now, and, like, I don't know if I've got the gift of the gab or something, but I do have quite a few private places now, and I've found them in all different ways. The only one I never do is I never door knock, because that I just wouldn't enjoy that if someone came to my place. I'm a bit private like that, and it works for some people, and that's fine, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't go knock on someone's door. I don't know. Maybe I don't have the confidence to do that, but some people do, and good on them, but. Yeah, like I still think the state forest, like the first deer I ever shot was just like a yearling, just like a real little tiny thing, you know, you just pick it up with one arm and it was nothing. But that to me is like so much more, because it seems like it's truly free range. Even though private property, you know, they're free range on there too. You know, the fences aren't very high and they jump over them or they cross the river. And some of the places that I have back onto state forest, so you know they're coming in and out, and it's just whoever's there at the time gets it. But shooting it in a state forest has a different feel to it. It's I don't know. I think it's more of an achievement. I don't know whether it is or not, but it feels like it is.
I would agree. I mean, I've said it on the podcast. The first deer I got was on the private block. It was a Roosa, and we went for not even a 10-minute walk, found him, snuck in, shot, done. And I was just like, yes. Okay. Didn't feel like hunting. It felt like just shooting. And look, the principles were the same, and it wasn't. Mm-hmm. I would actually say it was more like hunting because you had bushland, and it did feel that way a little, but it just felt easy.
Too easy. Yeah.
And then I've got a couple in the state forest now, and they have been a lot harder, and it's been a lot longer journey, but that's cool. Yep. I would love the mix, and I'd love the mix more to have that private block, to have that steady stream of venison, because I'm all about the self-sufficiency. And it was awesome the other night. We had one of the first times that it just sort of coincided that the whole dinner was everything out of our veggie garden, and the meat was the venison. And that is cool. My kids all ate it, you know, and they're like 18, my twins are 18 months and my son's 3.5, and they were sitting there, and the next night they wanted more venison. And it was like, yeah, this is what I want. This is awesome.
Yeah.
So I'd love to have that steady stream, and the state forest doesn't mean that's going to happen, because I've got a couple, you know, I've got two now and two different state forests, and one was the first time I was in one. So I'm starting to go, hey, it's coming together, which I love, but I would love the fact if I had that steady stream of venison as well as the state forest. I wouldn't give up state forest because I love the challenge of a state forest. That's exciting, exploring new property, finding things. I like that. That's not, you know, I wasn't even upset when I like to hunt Maragal North. It's one of my favorite forests. I love the snowies. And when I went down there, there was just people everywhere. And the camp spots that I sort of go to were packed. And I just went, well, okay, I'm going to try something else, because I booked a second forest. I said, I'm going to go try that. First time there, just exploring. I had a great time. Like it wasn't, I wasn't upset going, damn it, these people are there. No, I liked getting into that other forest and finding new places. It's awesome. And that's the beauty too, like of being able to do that. So I feel very lucky.
Yeah, and I think that's where some of the achievement comes from, is that it's sort of like it's a real world version of you versus all the other guys. Who's going to get the deer? Who's going to get the pig? And it's more of a real life, because it is public. You know, if it's private, it's you versus the animal. Maybe one or two other guys that have got access, and that's about it. Which doesn't diminish the hunt at all, but I just think when it's public land, it's just like it's a free for all, and if you get it, you get it. You know, you were the best on the day, and yeah, I like that. It's a lot more realistic if shit hit the fan. That's how it would be.
Like a Walking Dead scenario. I look at it and go, it's like the stars have to align in this beautiful way that you are in the forest, that it comes together, that no one else has been able to take that animal off that public land. And the forests I hunt down the Snowies are pretty popular. So, you know, they're getting hit all the time. So there's a lot of opportunity for other hunters to get those animals before you do. So when you do get there and you're seeing them, it is almost, I get excited just seeing them down there, because I'm like, okay, these things are on edge because they know they're getting hunted and hunted pretty hard, and I'm still able to get within that range to see them or shoot them. That's awesome. Like I think it's all part of it. I don't know. I'm a bit sort of romanticism of the whole thing of just being out in the bush and enjoying your time, exploring and putting yourself up against nature and these amazing animals. Like that, it's,
and then you get to know those forests as well. Like I haven't been out. I then, after sort of Vulcan, then ended up hearing that Pennsylvania was a good forest, and I thought, oh, that's got a crazy name, like let's head out there. And I ended up getting really in tune with that. It was the eastern side of it. It's all logged now, but that eastern side of it, any time I could go there, I could get a deer. Every single time, I just knew where they were going to be at what time, and I did. Every single time we went, My brother hadn't got one, and I was like, let's book it in. We went for a camp, and I was like, let's go. Walk down, bang, got one. Just like it was so good. And even though it was easier, it still felt as good because you put the work in, you learnt the forest, and it's almost like you achieve that level of, cool, you know, I can go in here and I know how this place works and I'm really in tune with it. So that was nice. I really enjoyed that. And then they started logging it and pushed everything out. That was the end of it. Back to scratch.
I like the idea of knowing a forest. Now, that's where I really went wrong in my earlier sort of hunting career, is that I didn't go to a forest more than twice. I was sort of going to new forests and it was all about exploring and learning and just getting my hands dirty and getting out there. And no, I wouldn't take it back because I thoroughly enjoyed that. But I noticed the difference when I just went, all right, let's spend a bit more time in one forest and start to understand what's going on and put it together, put those puzzle pieces together. That made a big difference. And it started to feel a lot easier. Not saying it's easy, but saying it started to feel a lot easier that when I was going there, knowing where the deer would probably be, getting onto them or, you know, seeing them, etc. That was probably one of those things. So that's been a good thing. A mate of mine or a listener that's now a mate, and shout out to Johnny, his goal is to hunt every single state forest. And he gives it a really good crack. I'll tell you that. He's done a lot. And he's pretty damn successful in there. He's going to come on the podcast at some stage. I'm hoping actually it'll be a live one in hunt camp for his birthday. But we talk about that. And he likes exploring and just getting to that new forest and checking it out. And that's cool too. I mean, and this is the thing. Everyone hunts for different reasons and has different appeals to it. And as I said, and I know you're on board because you said it before, as long as it's legal, go for it. Like do what makes you happy within the confines of the law. Like go for it. That's awesome.
It's your style. It's your passion. It's your love. And it keeps you happy. It keeps you fit and motivated. Go for it. All the power to you. Like I see these bow hunters and I'm like, man, you are insane. Like I got a neighbor that bow hunts the state forests. It's pretty successful with it. I think he's crazy, but I love it. Like, I'm probably not going to do it. I've got a bow. I can't spend the time mucking around with it to get good enough. Maybe it'll be something I do later in life, but now I'm the same. I've got young kids. I don't have time to do that, so I'm off riding bikes and stuff instead. So I just love that he loves it that much, but it's not for me. You know, it's his style. It's his thing. I couldn't imagine stalking into an animal for 2 hours and then just have it run away, you know. And he'll do that and he's fine with it and that's awesome, but I couldn't do that. Not yet. Maybe I need to be a bit older, need some more patience or something.
I'd need to be a far better hunter. I've got the bow and I've got good with the bow because I practice a lot. I'm lucky enough that I can do that here where I live, but I'm definitely not a good hunter to get out there and do that. Like, there's no hope. I think the rifle, I was talking to a mate and he got his first two the other week. It's been a good rut for a lot of new hunters, which has been awesome. And I love seeing what's coming about and what's happening. It's got me so pumped for the next trip. And he has taken 5 years to get his first two. So good on Sam. Mate, so good, but that's dedication. 5 years with the bow, and we went hunting together. And he was there when I got my first state forest deer. And I was saying to him, because he never even looked like, you know, releasing an arrow because they were just never that close. And I was like, man, you've got to get a gun. Like, I like the bow side, but man, like, you could be amongst it right now, and you could have had your first, but yeah. You've got the bow, but hey, more power to him. It's paid off and he's got two. It's I think a much bigger accomplishment than what I've done. So good on him.
Oh yeah. Like he's setting the bar high. So it's like, yeah, you might have to wait longer for that achievement, but man, it's a hell of an achievement. If you're state forest bow hunting, like, yeah, that's right up there. That's some hard work.
Oh, 100%. Is it just deer, Chase, mate, or is there a bit more? How did... Because some of those forests really? Have got pigs and things in there, haven't they?
Yeah, I'm not really too fussed. I love the deer the most, and I'm big into reds at the moment, and I've got two properties that I'm pushing really hard on the reds with, and I'm trying to understand them. They're way harder than the fallow. I thought they were hard to learn, but now they're not too bad. I can sort of can kind of get around what they're doing and how to get them, but the reds are just different. You know, I thought being so big that they would just be so loud and so obvious, and it's exactly the opposite. They are impossible to find, and they hear the slightest noise and they are out of there. So yeah, that's my big focus at the moment. But, you know, just during the rut, one property, you know, the farmer wants us to sort of maintain the deer herd. She's just got reds and a couple of fallows. So we were going out in the rut looking for them. We didn't find anything, and we just came across some pigs. So we just shot them instead because it's kill on sight for pigs. So they're just wrecking her land at the moment. So I'll take anything. I've obviously got my preferences, but it also depends on the property. Some of them are just, you know, take out. They've all got different rules. One of them is every fallow, just shoot every fallow you can find. They've got trees on there, like fruit trees, and they wreck the trees. So anything I can find, I take out. And I'll even do it where I hunt during the day. As soon as it turns night, I then turn into sort of pest control version, and I'll spotlight or thermal. I'll do whatever I need to do, because some of these properties, you've got to put numbers on the board. Otherwise, you know, it's a waste of time for them, because they're booking you in and they're moving animals around for you and things like that, and for you to get in there. And, you know, it's a free agreement. You know, I don't pay to go on any of them. It's sort of an exchange, my time for me to come and help them out, because it's not something they want to do. So, yeah, so follow their rules a little bit. That's where I don't always want to, but sometimes you got to do that. So, yeah, and anything like just hunting, you know, just seeing my dad, you know, he still takes out his little Lithgow 22 with us, and he's in his 70s now. And he'll pop a rabbit if he sees one, things like that. We still shoot foxes. My first big animal out of a state forest was a goat. So, yeah, I don't really care too much. I don't let much walk. If it's feral, it goes, except for the deer. I will let deer walk. If they're young, or if I'm just not interested in taking something, I'll let them go. But everything else has a target on it. Yeah, I'm sort of, I guess, a little bit sort of want to get rid of the ferals, I guess. I don't think the deer in managed numbers really hurt the environment too much. I think once you get big herds, you know, get 100 or 200 of them running through, they're gonna wreck some stuff. But yeah, I don't like the pigs. I don't like the way they rip up the ground. I don't like foxes, you know, killing native animals. One of our best posts, actually, on the group, you might have seen it. It almost went out to every single member. It was some great trail cam footage that a guy got of two big eagles fighting a fox off a lamb carcass. Man, like, I just loved those pictures so much. It's just so very iconic. Cool. And I just thought, this is why you do it. You know, like, you just don't want that competition between the ferals and the natives. I really like our native animals. And that was one of the motivating factors for getting into hunting is to give them a bit more of a chance and try and get out some numbers.
I agree. I think I would be up there with trying to get cats. Probably as one of the highest. If I see a state forest, if I'm out in the state forest, I don't care if it's the rut. If I see a cat, it's gone. Just the damage they do.
I've only ever seen one, and it was a bit of a stretch, and my brother took a shot at it and missed it. And that's the only cat I've ever seen on state forest, and that was in Pennsylvania a long time ago. And that's the only one I've ever seen in private or state forest. But yeah, I'd be the same. It's just not on my list because I just don't like, yeah, that was probably 6 years ago, you know, the last one I saw. maybe it's just the places that I hunt just don't have them much, which is good. But yeah, I'm the same. I don't like cats. I like cats, you know, if they're inside.
Yeah.
I don't like cats roaming the streets or not a fan.
It's that's an interesting one, isn't it? I still get very sort of perplexed at how that works. Is you've got to keep dogs sort of constrained, but everyone just has this sort of, not everyone obviously, but a lot of people have the cats, that's just what they do. They're cool to jump the fence and go into other people's like yards and go out into the bush. Yeah. And it's like, if that was a dog, people would be probably up in arms, especially a scary dog. You know what I mean?
Like, I live up in the Blue Mountains, west of Sydney, and we're a World Heritage area, and basically can't do anything here. You can't shoot, you can't hunt, you can't even walk in the bush without rules and regulations. And we just have cats walking around. And you think to yourself, like, how is this okay? Like, we bait for feral dogs, we bait for the foxes, and yet we just have these cats, which we know just eat so many native animals. And for some reason, we're okay with it. I don't get it. I think maybe a lot of greenies own cats, and somehow they've kept the legislation away from themselves. I don't know, but someone got away with something somewhere.
Yeah, 100%. They sort of fly under the radar compared to other species. For a species that definitely has such an impact on native animals and the amount they kill, and they actively kill a lot, it always sort of makes me wonder when you talk about like the deer and the Brumbies sort of get a bigger pass, even though they're bigger, you know, have bigger hooves. And where I hunt in the snow is, geez, there's some Brumbies down there. Oh my God, they're everywhere. And you can see they do so much more damage than the deer, but they still, there's so much support to keep them there for whatever reason. And
because there's poems about them.
Yeah, that seems to be the, you know, it's, they're part of our culture. And I understand where people are coming from, and I don't want to see them removed from the landscape. I think, as you said before, manage the numbers. You don't. Yeah. I don't want to see herds of 100 deer running around the joint. Like, that's not good. But
no,
small amounts that people can sustainably use, that has to be a win. And even horses. I really hate the fact that aerial culling the horses. That's such a waste of good meat. And it I'm is. Sure there's plenty of people that would be more than happy to take that meat. I'd be one of them. Yep. I'll put my hand up there. And for whatever reason, I don't get why we sit there and go, hey, just shooting them out of a helicopter or whatever way we're going to go about it. But it's just such a waste of a resource. It blows my mind, especially in the current climate of inflation going through the roof and people struggling out there. It makes no sense.
Yeah. And other countries have programs for it. Like, I know America has the Hunters for the Hungry, and you can donate, you know, mostly deer and pigs to that. And that makes total sense. I think here it's a little bit harder because it's not ingrained in our, I guess, in probably white culture, I'm thinking of, to eat these animals. A lot of other countries, you know, they love things like that. Like, when I did a boys' trip to Japan, and we actually ate raw horse. And it was great. It's just meat with sauce on it. Like, it just tastes like nothing else.
Yep.
And then I sort of thought, like, yeah, like, that seemed really exotic to me. But I thought, there's probably people out there that just eat this as just Sunday dinner. Like, it's just no worries. And I guess goats slowly moving into that a little bit. Like, feral pig will always, I think, be on the outside as where, you know, domesticated pigs will always be okay. They're just a little bit riskier, I guess. But yeah, like, that culling is crazy. That I was actually talking to a farmer the other day because it was the rut, and I was booking stuff in with them to go out there, and they said, just letting you know as well, they are aerial culling out here through the whole rut. And I thought, oh, what an interesting time, and how well they've lined that up. Like, local land services getting out their helicopter and just blasting everything right all around the state forest, all around the edges, all through it, right when it's peak rut time for hunters. great, you know, this isn't going to help.
It doesn't make sense. I don't understand where that comes from, because it does happen every year that it aligns and there's an aerial culling program around the rut. And that is the most active time that hunters are out there. So I get people go, oh, recreational hunters don't make as much of a dent, which I would argue the opposite. But anyway,
yep.
When you are having the best time for them to be out there, why would you not do it afterwards or leave? Mm-hmm. Let them do their thing. It doesn't cost any money. It's going to actually be valuable for the economy, especially those rural, remote sort of towns as well. You are sort of not pissing off hunters, but you are definitely upsetting them and frustrating them. And I just don't get why the timing is like that. The only thing I can put it down to is that a lot of the shooters for these guys are doing it because they also want some hits. And that is the reason they want to be out there too. That's the only thing I can think of, because it makes zero sense, the time when hunters are in the bush, to be aerial culling and shutting parts of the forest down and things like that, and even on private properties, makes no sense to me. So it has to be something like that, from my guess.
I'm not sure either. Like, I can understand, and I was talking to her about it. She said, oh, they've got, you know, 40 deer from around here, and they said, oh, that's a bit of a bugger. She said, but they did get, you know, 200 or so pigs. And I thought, yeah, that is probably pretty good, because those pig numbers, I don't think with how fast pigs grow that us hunters can really keep them under control by ourselves. Like, they are one place I had trail cam footage and they were just babies. And then I think I shot the same ones the other week and they weren't babies anymore. Like, they just grow so fast and just breed so quickly.
And so many of them. They breed so quick, early too. Like,
yeah, it's from like 6 months or something.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
So I can kind of get a little bit on board with that, in that, okay, like, maybe, and I don't think that's really going to hurt our hunting for pigs much. I think they're going to come back fine. So I think they're just keeping numbers under control. But I think deer, I don't think they're really surveying how many are in there and thinking, oh, you know, let's keep this kind of number. I think they're just thinking, the more we shoot, the more funding we get, the, you know, the longer we can keep our jobs or whatever it is. I don't think there's any pre-thought of recreational hunters at all. And there may even be some negative actions towards us, you know, because, yeah, I can't think of a reason why you would shoot during the rut. They would know, you know, they know what's going on.
I would love to see some sort of model where we get into places we don't currently have access for a fee. National parks, I'd love to be able to charge money and put that money towards helicopter culling of pigs, because they're a different kettle of fish. You talk about a deer will have one offspring and that'll be every 12 months. The pigs are pumping out a lot more of that. As you said, they get to a breeding age a lot quicker. So then they're reproducing. So the numbers aren't just doubling each, you know, potential season. They can be well and truly exacerbated from there. But we seem to, I'd rather, and as you said before about people eating pigs, that's a very hit and miss sort of topic and subject. Some people have no problems whatsoever doing it. Others have much like, no, I'm not going to touch it. And hey, each their own. I get it. I'll put my hand up and say I'm probably on the I won't eat them category. I just think it's too much risk for me. And if anyone else does it, hey, good luck to you. That's fine. It's your call, your life. But I would definitely like to see more conservation money be raised by recreational hunters by giving us opportunities to say, hey, you like chasing deer, you use the meat. Here's some good areas, because down here in Sydney, mate, through Wollongong, through the Royal National Park,
yep,
man, I've seen some amazing animals. And like 20 years ago, driving through the national park of a night and seeing some stags in there that were just monsters. Yep. And I sit there and just go, why haven't we got access here? What is going on? That it's public land that's locked up. there's animals there they want removed, but hey, we'll cull them from a chopper, or we'll do ground shooting of them, which that makes zero sense to me. If you can ground shoot, why are you paying someone to ground shoot when you can put someone in there? Because all you're doing is you're putting up a sign. I've seen the signs. I've been there when they've put the signs up saying there's ground shooting going on in this area. Okay, why can't a hunter do that? Like, it's going on in Victoria. They go on public land. There hasn't been accidents. Here in New South Wales is the same. Touch wood. It's all good. What are we doing? Why are we so adverse to, you know, looking at some ideas like this as a, you know, society? It's crazy, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I think that it's mostly an emotional thing, and it's a really hard sell that a politician will, like, there's always the minor parties that will push stuff like this for us, but higher ups or bigger parties have no interest in it because it's too much of just a big red flag and a big mess for them. You know, this politician, he thinks it's a good idea to let people just shoot guns in our state forest and murder animals. You know, like, that's how they'll
the terminology and persuasive language that hits that, you know, emotions.
Yeah, and it gets everyone on board. Oh, this is bad, you know, as where if you really uncover the actual story, which no one ever does, is that, no, we're actually, you know, interested in the conservation of these areas, or maybe we're not. Maybe we just like hunting. You know, who cares what your reasoning is for it? I'm more interested in the output of there's money in the bank, there's less animals that are feral in our national parks. And that's the outcome. And I don't really care how we get there. I just, I'd love recreational hunters to be able to do that. But, they're not interested in it. I don't think they care. I don't think they care that the animals go to waste. I don't think it bothers them. As long as it's off their hands and they can just say, oh, we hire professionals. You know, professionals look after. They love that word. The difference between a professional and amateur is you just put an invoice in. You know, you might have the years of experience and the gear and all that stuff, but that's the main difference, is you're just paying someone to do a job. And that's the other way around, is we could pay them. Like, if you're looking at going on a guided hunt and looking at the fees you'd have to pay for some of the heads that you get on there, and then you look at what you'd get out of a state forest, like, people will pay for it, obviously. So let them do it. It'd be a huge moneymaker.
Oh, yeah. And then just, I don't think people, well, I think it's a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow, as having that as ecotourism. The idea of killing animals, whether it's for meat or fun, they still see it as that sort of, like, when the word sport is used, it gets a lot of people's backs up. And they don't understand the side of it because they've never been hunting. And let's be honest, the people that you're trying to change the opinions of that are so strongly against it, they have never stepped foot out hunting in the bush. They think it's super easy. They think it's cruel. And you're not probably going to change that. Although I will say, I have had a lot of conversations with a lot of people who were very anti-hunting. And once they heard why I hunt and talk through it, then they understand the respect of, you know, respect for the animal, and that I don't want to see any animal suffer. And I talked about, I don't want cats on the landscape. I still don't want to see cats suffer when they're shot or whatever way they're dispatched.
Yeah.
And I think that's, people miss that. And even when they attach the word sport to it and, or trophy hunting or whatever they call it to try and, you know, have that persuasive language to have that negative connotation, they're not thinking about, like, the whole thing, that most hunters, and I really truly believe that the majority of people are ethical hunters, and that they don't want to see any animal suffer. And for me, that's what we've got to promote and push more. And it's a tricky thing. It's a very tricky thing because everyone has a different perspective or perception. And we spoke about it earlier with photos getting put through or how people, what they want to do. There are some that I would sit there and go, I would never publish this in a public forum because if aunties or just general public saw this, it's going to leave a bad taste in the mouth and maybe tarnish hunters. And hey, again, you do you. I'm all for that. But I like to approach it and go, I want to put stuff out there that is going to highlight respect and the ethical side of hunting to promote us in a good light. And I think the more people that will do that, the more inroads we'll make to being able to do things in the future. And hey, we may never, but it can't hurt, in my opinion.
For sure. Yeah, I think that's the thing is people, when we put up photos and we show people our hunts or our videos, they are just seeing the end result, which is, as hunters, that's what we want to see, because we know that it was hard for you to get there. We already know that bit. And so we want to show off, you know, the fruits of our hard work. And we all get that and we all respect it. You know, someone puts up a state forest animal they took, everyone writes on there, like, awesome, you know, congratulations on your first deer or pig or whatever it is, because you know how hard that was for you to get. So you know difficulty for that achievement. The general public doesn't know that at all. And they will watch those videos of headshot compilations or people just shooting a deer, and they think that's what you do. You go out to the place, you shoot the animal, and then you high-five your friends and you drink beers, and then that's it. You know, like, and it's so hard to capture all the rest of it, you know. And I've had the same thing, friends or family sort of think, like, you know, it's a bit hunting, it's a bit crazy and all this. And then I'll tell them about my trip, and I'm like, oh, I just went out with the family and we, you know, did a vegan hunt today where we just walked around and we looked at stuff and you know, came back. And like, I think for state forests, I'd probably be, yeah, still around the 90% of the time I took nothing, and I was going a lot. And to think that someone is bloodthirsty or just likes killing things or injuring things or just wants to be cruel, for you to go out and not do that 90% of the time, it just doesn't make any sense. You've got to have more pure motivations to go and just wander through the bush and look at things and hope to see something. And then if you don't, you come home happy still. You couldn't do that with anything negative in your mind. It's got to be a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, even if you go out there and you're armed bushwalking, it's not a bad thing. It's just great to get into the bush, just be immersed in that culture, it just turns that in history.
I see this every single time I see someone put up photos of like kangaroos and like nature photos with flowers and stuff, and I'm like, yeah, that was an unsuccessful hunt for sure. Because like that's
you've been following my Instagram, have you?
Yeah. I think everyone does the same thing. You're just like, man, I've been sitting here for an hour and I haven't got anything. So you're like zooming in on this like really cool spider's web with like the morning dew on it. Like everyone has that same photo. Like yeah, you're just sitting there, just chilling out, just admiring what's around you. Yeah, I think, and that's the hard thing is like people just don't get to see that, and I wish they did, but unless they came out with you, I don't think they ever would. And sometimes they don't see the other things where I'll just go out and we'll just see some deer sometimes, and I'll just take a photo of them, and that's super satisfying. My other thing that I love doing is just checking game cameras. Like I'm huge on trail cameras. Like if I don't see anything or get anything, I'm like, I just can't wait to get to my cameras and just get the photos on my phone and just see what was there, you know, what's around, what's possible. Like I love that so much.
So what do you run with your trail cameras? I was having this chat with Ian from the Hunter's Campfire when we recorded, and I am a fiend for wanting the video. I don't usually go the pictures, I go the video. Yeah. Because I will sit there and almost make, I've got a couple of compilations here that I'll probably never post anywhere just for me to watch. Just I love watching them move in their own environment with no one there. That's cool.
Yeah, that's actually inspired me a bit now. I think because I'm photo only, because what I was doing was going to state forest and I'd leave them up for 3 months and come back. So I could only have it take photos or just run out of battery or run out of memory too quick. So, now that I've got some private spots and there's not as much movement of roos or things like that, and I can get out there more often, like most of my places are within an hour of my house. So I think I might switch over now and start doing video, because it does. That actually accidentally happened once, and I got some good footage of like just a nice buck, just a fallow buck, just stamping his front foot. And I was just sort of wondering, like, why is he doing that? You know, what's he communicating? But with a photo, I would have missed that. And that's something I think I could get a lot more information out of it if I changed that over. So, yeah, I might do what you're doing now.
Well, that, and I also think it's a bit of an incentive to get back out and get them more often.
Yeah, and true.
Switch them over. Like, I have a couple out and I just leave them out. And then I'll take the memory card and just batteries and just do a straight swap. But yep. I've also found, depending on the cameras, I've had some really good luck with getting a decent amount of memory on the card, like a bigger one. And I tend to look for that in cameras. I'll pick one that will be able to handle a decent sized card to be able to get more. And I've actually found that the batteries and things haven't been that bad. They're hit and miss. I've had a couple that they're just rat shit. The battery will last nearly 2 weeks and it's almost done. You sit there and go, what the hell? Like, there's nothing here. I don't understand how this is even working. But some of the others, I had one out for months and video, no issue. And I got out there and it wasn't depleted enough to really change. It was sort of like the halfway symbol was there. And I was like, this is bloody good. No. I thought it'd be dead, but it wasn't. Yep. But yeah, I mean, they're all different. Same brand on another one didn't go as long. So it's a tricky sort of one. But I do like the idea of just seeing it. I've caught some cool footage of some Samba, you know, a stag that just the way they move. And that was amazing to watch. Very different animals compared to fallow. Fallow are, you know, sort of like the Labrador of the deer world, I think. Like, they're just, I'm watching them just bounce around and, you know, fluff about. And the Samba are just like this stalking sort of, they're almost like a predator. I sort of watch them and it makes sense that they're stalked by tigers because they sort of move like a damn tiger sometimes. Like, some of the footage I've got, I just sit there and go, wow, that's
really switched on.
Yeah. So I love that. Even that quick snippet of, you know, 30 seconds gives you a bit more information. So I thoroughly enjoy that side. And I was doing for a while there the three photos and then the video recording, but I'm just going to get rid of the photos and just go video because I do.
You can screenshot the best bit of the video anyway.
Correct.
Like, if it's in the right position, just screenshot it and take it. Yeah, I think I'm going to do that as well. And I'm starting to get cameras now. If I find something that's okay with rechargeable batteries and I'm just recharging everything. In the beginning, I wasn't. And I think I had Aldi cameras. I just wanted the cheapest one you could get because I was putting them on
public land.
And I was chaining them to trees as well and padlocking them. And I was trying to keep them in spots where people just wouldn't go, but you never know.
Yeah.
But I think I only ever got one or two people on them and people just wave or whatever and just keep walking. I've only ever found, I think, maybe one or two in my time as well. It's always funny seeing them.
I've never seen one. And maybe I don't know how I haven't. Like, I don't, in fairness, you don't look for them, do you? When you're looking for deer, you're not looking for trail cameras. Like, so you're not looking at every tree around going, is there something on there? But, yeah, I've never seen one or paid that much attention to that either.
Especially with public land. Like, I was getting boosted up and I was climbing trees to put them in and stuff to make sure people wouldn't find them.
Yeah, okay.
I was worried people, and I didn't really care about the camera. I just didn't want them to take my photos. The cameras were only like $100 from Aldi, and they, like, they're dead now, but I think they probably lasted, maybe the best one probably lasted 4 years. The last one definitely lasted probably three. So for $100, I was happy with that. I got some nicer ones now that I put on the private places, but I love them. I love them so much. They keep me so motivated that's out there. You know, if you were there at the right time, the right place, that could be you. You could find that animal. And that's a big push for me.
No, I like them. That's the one thing I don't like about the Ridgeline trail camera. Like, the quality's great. I love the fact you can open it up, position it, see the screen's against the unit, so it's not on the door like some of the other ones. I think the Audi ones were like that, where it's on the door, you got to open up and you can't sort of get that spot. But there's no lock. So anyone can just come up, unclip it, and take your memory card. And that's devastating to me. That I don't want that to happen. The value is in what's on the cards, not so much the camera, because what you get $100 camera, it's two cases of beer. Like in the scheme of things, it's not that much. It's you sit there and I just go, I don't want to lose what is on that camera. And just that would drive me insane.
Oh, there's nothing worse like when I go to a camera and like the card's just corrupted on me.
Oh.
Just infuriates me. Or there's like, you know, 3,000 photos of a spider that's made a home on the lens. Kills me. Or when I was starting, I'd set it up and not realize that the little branches in front would flicker and set the camera off. So I'd just get, you know, a couple of thousand photos of a windy day.
I found the sensitivity is all over the place. You can have two identical cameras and have them both on medium sensitivity and or whatever it's called. And, man, one will pick up something so far away compared to the other. Like they're really different. It's sometimes a bit mind-blowing. And maybe it's just the cheaper cameras compared to the more expensive ones. But it's that juggle, isn't it? It is always in my mind, unfortunately, on public land that, you know, people may not do the right thing all the time. And it's we shouldn't have to think like that. But, I mean, doesn't matter what you do, there is people that are going to break the law, do the wrong thing, and it's just the way of the world, isn't it? So
yeah, especially when you leave them alone in the bush, there's no one around to see them. People are bad enough in car parks, and let alone the bush. So, but yeah, like I'm the same. Like I used to lock them up and try and hide them and all sorts. But it is what it is. But I just like the idea that they're out there hunting for me, like they're out there scouting while I'm at home.
Yep.
And I find that cool. Like I've been to some spots in the state forest where I thought like there's nothing here, but it was at the end of the day and I'm like, I got to put it somewhere, you know. So just put it on a tree and in a little valley and hope for the best. And then you come back and there's like, there's red deer in here. Like I had no idea. I didn't see any scat. I didn't see any signs, rub trees, nothing. You're like, okay, they just passed through this area. You know, all right, that's another piece to the puzzle.
Yep.
And then off you go again. I just love that they're there when I'm not doing work for me.
No, it's pretty cool to see some of that footage that you'd never see. And it's exciting. I get super pumped up to grab cameras. I'm not going to lie. The last time I went to the Snowies, with the family, I should say, we went down there and stayed in Airbnb and that's all I was down there for. It was the family trip, but I wanted to check the cameras. They'd been out for a few months and I was just dying to get the footage. And so I shot off early one morning and just grabbed them. I don't think I even took the rifle, but it's so exciting. It's like I relate it to my Christmas day opening up presents and seeing what's there. It's so cool. But, mate, the rut is here. We are like in prime time at the moment. Have you got a couple of hunts coming up? What are you doing for it?
Yeah, I've got my brothers and my dad are going out this Friday, but I don't think I can go. So they're going to a spot where the fruit trees are, and they're going to go down and no doubt clean up, I'd say, a nice fallow buck or two, which is all right. I've already got a nice one from there. It was sort of my first, I guess, buck that wasn't a spiker. So I've got him just as a Euro mount. But, yeah, they'll go down there and I reckon they'll get something pretty good. It's a weird spot where there's not many places to hunt. This is one of the few. So it gets very, almost no pressure. And they're like clockwork, the deer down there. So I think they'll come home with something pretty good. We've had nights where we've shot three or four in a night, just spotlighting and thermal and stuff. But we've hunted some good ones on there as well. So I think they'll be all right. And then I haven't booked anything else in yet, but I've done 3 trips now. I haven't heard any noise yet, but we just had yesterday a nice big cold front come through. So hopefully this weekend, if I can get out, I don't really plan stuff too far in advance because most of the places that I can go, I can just flick a message and just head out and I can just run out. It's only an hour to get there, sit for the afternoon and then just drive back and I'm back home, you know, before the kids are in bed. So I'm pretty lucky like that. So yeah, I'm keen as. I just want to hear some roars. I haven't heard a lot of them before. Heard them in the state forest, and I've heard a couple on private, but back in the old Pennsylvania days, I got onto a really good fallow that was just going crazy, and it was an amazing thing to, and we got pretty close to it, and just to hear them roar like that was a bit freaky. Like in the beginning, we were like, nah, we're going to be careful. We're walking into a dude with a big speaker or something, a game caller or something. He's calling some hunters into him. Like we were like, be careful, you know, someone might pop out of the bushes. And then we ended up finding a nice big fallow. But, you know, as it goes with public land, he was probably 3 meters the wrong side of the creek on the farmer's property. So we just sat and just watched him, and off he went into the hills, and we just kept calling to him, and that was it. He was never coming back. But yeah, I'll get out probably next weekend, I think.
That's fun though. Like I had the last trip, I got a spiker, but the day before, that same morning, there was one croaking, so it was really early, and we were back and forth for 20 minutes, and then you could hear him coming in, and then he'd back off and come in, and we just kept going until he took off. But we didn't even get eyes on him, but it was so much fun. I think this time is really exciting because the footage, like not just the animals that are getting taken and people getting their first and the stories, and that's bloody cool, but then the footage of them fighting and people capturing them croaking, and it's awesome. And I was very lucky. I said I'm addicted to that croaking now, and I got down and was able to hear a few for the last trip, and I'm going away again. So I'm excited to hear hopefully them. And then I'm also going to a forest where there's reds up there, and I'm really keen. I haven't heard roaring before, so I'm dying to hear them this year, just because I haven't had it in person, and I'm such an addict for the croaking. It's a little scary, mind you. I sit there and go, what will I be like when I hear a red?
yeah, I've only heard reds from a distance, like from maybe another valley away. I've never had one up close roaring, but yeah, I think it would be exciting, but I think it would almost be a little bit scary at the same time. Like,
it's such a big animal.
Big and interesting thing. And I don't even think, like, when I tell my friends about it, like, about this time of year, because only a couple of my friends are interested in hunting, and I don't think most people even know that it exists, that, first of all, that the deer exist in Australia. Like, people don't even know. And then that they make these crazy noises, like, yeah, it's such an interesting thing.
It's so cool. I actually took my wife just up to the local deer farm to hear the fellow croaking up there, because for me, because I was like, oh, I want enough of what they're doing. And B, you're pretty much. And not that I can go anywhere out here anyway, but it was just more to see what's going on and just try pattern them with some weather and in the local area in case I ever get lucky enough for some access. And I said to the wife, she'd never heard it, and she's one of the things I keep saying to her, and I love going bush, and the last camping trip was amazing because I'm laying there in bed listening to them croaking around us on the last morning and going, this is awesome. And she's a massive camper, but I said, you'll love just that experience. Like, she's never going to be a hunter. I know that. And that's fine. I've got no issue with that. But I know she will love that experience and hearing that. So I took her along to hear it, and she thought it was pretty cool. And I was like, yeah, we'll have to get out into an actual forest when there's a few going off, not just this one on a farm. So that was a step in the right direction to get out more, I think, maybe, hopefully, if she's listening. Hint, hint.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I'm lucky like that, that I can just run and do arvo trips. Like that's been a big thing for me, to be able to step it up, the amount of times I can get out there, because I find it it's so rough for guys, especially they live in the city and they're coming out. You know, it's three plus hours to get to a forest. So that's a huge chunk of time. That means you're definitely camping.
Yep.
That's hard. Then you're asking your family to look after the kids or whatever it is. It's a big mission. So for me to just run out in the arvos and come back is, yeah.
Yeah, you're laughing. So nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Right. And look, I get why people are so protective of private because of that. I would be too. I get it. Like, you know, it's one of those.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that, you know, you want to do the right thing by the farmer and you don't want to lose that access. And I completely understand that side of it. So it's.
Yeah, that's what I think the thing is with private. I see a lot of people struggle with getting on to private property. And the thing I think that's worked for me is just understanding that it's a fair trade. Like I see a lot of people say, like, I'll pay, you know, I'll give you money and beers. And I don't feel that that really works that well. I think it's a little bit desperate in a way. Is where I take the other way of thinking, I'm doing you a favor. You obviously don't want to shoot these things. You know I do, but my ammo, it's my fuel, it's my guns, my license, my insurance, all that, it's my time. So I see it as a fair trade and I kind of treat it like that. I'll help out here and there. You know, I fed a cat on the weekend and looked after the lady's cat for her and things like that, but I'm not paying or anything. I see my time as being quite valuable. And I think if you go in with that mentality of I'm here to help, this is a fair agreement, we're both getting something out of this, I think that'll help people change the way they probably speak and think. And then the other thing I reckon is following their rules. Every place that I hunt at has different rules. You know, some of them, one of them, which is weird, the block with the fallow on it, with all the fruit trees, we don't shoot foxes on it, which yeah. I thought the same thing. I'm like, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard. And then he sort of explained to me, he's like, well, we don't have sheep or cattle farmers around here and we want to keep the rabbit numbers in check. So if you shoot all the foxes, the rabbits are going to eat the roots of my trees.
Yep.
And then I'm going to have problems. I thought, okay, he's using the feral animals to his advantage against other feral animals. Okay, cool. He knows his land and he knows what's happening in his area. And now that I'm there, I'm like, yeah, I rarely see a rabbit here. I've seen probably two or three. And I see a couple of foxes around and it's working. Yeah, I'm not all for it. You know, if it was my land, I think I'd be shooting them all, but I definitely get his play by doing it. And yeah, I just really follow their rules. I reckon that's a big one.
Yeah, mate, makes sense. So
yeah,
really appreciate your time coming on the podcast tonight because it is a pretty peak season and, you know, we're all flat out. So I do appreciate you giving up your time. Mate, hats off to you taking over. I know you've been doing it for a while now, but also, you know, continuing with the group and, you know, hopefully really respecting what Gibbo did and whatnot. I didn't get the pleasure to meet him, but all the stories have been, everyone speaks very highly of him. So I'm glad you sound like a great bloke and I've loved what I've heard tonight from you. So I think it's in good hands going forward. So keep doing great things with that page. I'm sure everybody that's listening to the podcast knows that page as well. So I'm not even going to say, we don't even need to plug it, mate. Mate, all the best for the rut. Hopefully you get out there the roar and get some reds, but really appreciate your time and, yeah, best of luck. Hope you have some fun out there.
Thanks for having me. This is the first podcast I've done, so it's been interesting. It's been a lot easier than I thought, so thanks for making it a nice, easy experience.
Oh, I'm glad you say that. I always just say it's just a chat. When people say, oh, yeah, it's a chat. No, I like talking to people. I like meeting new people. And I love hearing people's stories and how they got to where they have and, you know, hearing similarities and differences. So it's always always fun and informative. There's always something I pick up. I go away from each podcast going, oh, take that away out of that. So appreciate when guests come on and share. So, mate, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks a lot.
All right, listeners, thanks for tuning in and we'll catch you next time. Bye for now. If you have a topic, guest, question or any gear that you want to hear about on the podcast, shoot us an email, australianhuntingandbeyond@gmail.com. Alternatively, find us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. All the links are in the show notes. If you haven't already, make sure you give us a review and subscribe to our podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. Thanks for joining us and we'll catch you next time.